Okay, we start the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Mem Vav Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Hashuleach sivlonot to Beit Chamiv," someone who sends gifts to his father-in-law's house. Now, sivlonot over here, as the Rashbam describes, is minhag chatanim. So, minhag of the chatanim, la'achar kiddushim la'macharat, the next day. They used to shuleach to Beit Chamiv lichvod ishto. He used to send gifts to his father-in-law's house for the kavod of his newly found bride. That was the minhag of sivlonot. This is also one of the proofs that the Rashbam brought previously, that when we said before mohar, that there wasn't sivlonot, because he says the Mishnah explicitly deals with sivlonot, so mohar must be something different, something that you bring into the marriage with the ketubah, rather than the sivlonot, which are gifts given after the erusin. So now, shalach sham me'amaneh, so he sent over there some large sum of money, 100, right, maneh, v'acho sham sudat chatan. And then he went ahead and he ate by his father-in-law's house some sort of l'chaim or a vort, whatever it was, some sort of celebration of their marriage. Afilu b'dinar. And that was only worth a dinar's worth. I mean that he gave 100 times 100, right? He gave 10,000 dinar, and then he eats a meal that is worth one, right, dinar. In a nigvin. He can't get them back. He can't get them back. Why? Because we assume, and this is the way the Rosh Hashanah writes it, is shmachmat chibat simchat achila she'achal v'shata, from the simcha and the enjoyment, pleasure that he gets from eating there, the samachim ahem, and he was celebrated with them about the upcoming marriage, machal sivlonot, therefore he was mochel on the sivlonot. We're going to see which exactly sivlonot is mochel on. I mean, there are different categories, which we'll deal with partly in the Mishnah and partly in the Gemara. Lo achal sham sudat chatan, if he did not eat there, harel nigvin, then he can ask for them back. I mean, if the marriage dissolves, right, prior to there being nisuin, you can ask for those gifts back. Shalach sivlonot mirubim, if he sends a large sum or large number of gifts, sheyachzuru ima lebeit bala, that will return with her when she comes into the marriage. When she has nisuin, she'll bring those into the marriage with her. Then harelu nigvin, those can be claimed, or could be asked back for, because it's clear that the intention of these gifts is not to stay in her father-in-law's house, but actually to bring into the marriage with nisuin. Sivlonot mu'atin, on the other hand, if he gives her a small gift, that she's going to use in her father-in-law's house, right, or it's her father's house, but his father-in-law's house, then he can ask for them back. And merubim and mu'atim are not real categories. Merubim and mu'atim are just indications of intent, and the truth is here that even if they are small gifts, if he stipulates, right, that they're going to be for when she comes to bring this into the marriage, then those are claimable. If he does not make such a stipulation and he leaves them there with his father-in-law's house, then those aren't claimable. So it's not really about size. Size is just an indication of intent. If he gives a large gift, then it's clear that he intends for them to come back with her because there's so much. And then if he gives a small gift, it seems to mean his intention is that she use them in her father's house. So that's just an indication of intent.
The gift that comes back, large gift that comes back, does he mean the excess of what she hasn't spent to prepare for the wedding?
Okay, so that's what we're going to get to in a second. What exactly comes back and doesn't come back? So we'll do that in 1 second. Amar Rava, Dafka Dinar, that the minimum requirement of the meal that he participates in at the father-in-law's house is a dinar. That's what our Mishnah says. It's less than a dinar. That doesn't qualify or is not significant enough for him to be mochel on the sivlonot. Mar says, Pshita, dinar tznan. That's what it says in our Mishnah. I mean, our Mishnah says, dinar. What's the chiddush of Rav over here? So when it says, Maudu teinu edin afilu pachal midinar, I would have thought that the quantification of the meal is not significant here. The fact that it mentions a dinar is just the normal, right, way of being. And we saw that in yesterday's daf, when we quoted the about what deduction he gets for the food, right over there, Amar Abai, now gu b'nei ganana adzuza. That b'nei ganana says that a person normally eats or consumes a zuz worth of food. So here you see, a dinar, right, is a normal meal. So the Mishnah is just indicating, not indicating an absolute value, just indicating that a normal meal, if he goes over there, he has a meal with them. But that's not any minimum value to the meal. So kamash v'lon, that is the minimum. That's what Rav Rova comes to teach us, that there is a minimum, and it's not just, right, that the, not just that the Mishnah is giving us a normal case. Now, the Mishnah says, achal tna. Mishnah says that if he eats the meal there, he's mochel in the sivlonot. Shata mai. If he just had a l'chaim, is that enough? Right. Hu tnan. Right over there it says that he participates in a meal at the father-in-law's house. Shlucha umay. What about his shaliach? If his shaliach goes and may have to deliver the ziflanot and they treat him to a meal, right? Is that in his place? It says, Sham Tnan. It says that he participates in the meal in his father-in-law's house. Right? Shagarlo, right? Mai. What happens if they send the meal back to him and then he eats it by himself? So Tashma, Damar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Masiba Adam Echad, Shishigar Lo, the Beit Chaviv, Mea Kronot Shel, Kadei Yayim Shel Kadei Shemen, sent to his father-in-law's house, 100 wagons full of barrels of wine and barrels of oil, right? Vishel Klei Kesev, Vishel Klei Zav, right? He sent over silver utensils and gold utensils, Vishel Klei Milat, and he sent him silk or some sort of fine wool. Verachav b'simchato, and he went ahead and his great simcha, he rode it over his horse. Valach lamado petach beit chamiv, he showed up, the knight in shining armor, showed up by his father-in-law's house. V'yotzio kol shel chamin, they brought out to him an hot tea, you know, it was a long ride, he wanted a nice hot tea. V'shata, he drank it, umet, and died. And so this is, all the excitement was a little too much for him, and he passed away. I just point out over here that it's interesting, just from a perspective, the Rabbeinu Gershom goes out of his way to point out over here, say, that when he drank and died, he says, Hacha irlo, this is what happened to him, v'lo mishum kishuf. Not because of kishuf.
Wasn't poisoned.
Right, I'm saying it wasn't poisoned, wasn't you know, some sort of witches, right? It wasn't suspicious, which is interesting. I mean, he makes, I don't know, kishuf mandakar shmei, but that's, the Rabbeinu Gershom raises that issue. And then the Rashbam over here says, shatal suso umet, that he drank it on the sus itself, right? And then he died. Even though it says here, v'alach v'amad al petach beit chamiv, I know it sounds like he got off his horse, but here it sounds like he drove the horse up and he's just sitting outside and he's still drinking it while he's still on the horse. He never disembarked from the, or dismounted from the horse.
So you want to say that drinking on a horse is kasha l'kshafim?
I don't know. I'm only presenting it to you because I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable in these areas, but obviously there was something bothering them about this. I mean, I know, like you said, maybe they thought that they were, you know, it was like an insurance policy. They poisoned the guy after they got all the gifts. I don't know what was bothering them, but there's definitely something bothering their Beinu Gershom. They went out of his way to explain that.
So his family wanted the money back.
Right. They want it back. They want to make a claim back. So they brought this halacha before Rav Acha Sar Abira, before the Chachamim, Usha. That's where the Rabbi Zin HaGadol said at that time. Amru sivlonot hasuim livalot ein nigvin. She'ein hasuim livalot nigvin. So number one, right, sivlonot hasuim livalot, this is one qualification that's not mentioned in our Mishnah, but it's an additional qualification, which is that it depends if they are consumables or durables. If they are consumables, right, then ein nigvin. Then we do not assume that he can get them back, because the intent of the gift is that the woman will consume them. If she will consume them, then we don't expect them back. Other than if he gives durables to her, items that will last, right, for an extended period of time, then we do expect to get those back because their utility is using them, not losing them. Right? That's the utility is actually getting the function of the item, not the item itself. So therefore the item can be returned because the gift was the utility. So that would be an additional qualification over here. Shmamina. Alright, so from here we can see, number one, afilu shata. Number one, drinking should be sufficient. Why? He was set out of the house and they gave him a cup of tea, hot water, and then he died. And then the Chachamim said that was sufficient for him to lose his siblonot. So he's saying drinking is enough, number one. Shmamina, afilu pachot midinar. And number two, so this is...
What do you say?
Afilu pachot midinar, which goes against Rava's statement before. I'm saying, so it goes against Rav's statement, and that would reconcile, David, your questions, is now the Gemara is all in one direction. And that might have been what drove the Gemara to ask the question in this way, which is that they knew they were going to undermine Rav's position. But I feel a pocha midinar, that this hot water was clearly less than a dinar's worth, and yet they still lost the Sivlo notes from it.
Amaravashi. Man. Doesn't have to be in his home.
Man, that's what the Gemara will get to in 1 second. Man, leimalan, de lo shachakele marganita, de shavi alfa zuzev ashkai. Right, who says, right, we have the same, but a very similar type of language in the Gemara in Kedushin. Gemara in Kedushin wants to know when you have a Kinyan Agav, right, how big does the property have to be, machzik the property or not. Gemara says, well, how can you prove from here? Maybe he had a needle with a diamond on top, and therefore he's a Niknal Gav. So that could be possible. Also over here, what do you say? They crushed some sort of diamond or precious jewel into the tea. So the tea was, as Shaul said before, it's an expensive tea. It's a very, you know, it's an unusual type of special tea. The Rashbam claims that this was Derech HaSarim. They used to do this for refuah. They used to crush in some very expensive item in that. It just sounds to me like people have too much money. But whatever the case is, this was not your average tea. So you can't prove anything from this. That could be more than a dinar. So you can't prove anything about a dinar from here. Shema mina. So then this is David, you suggested. Afilu shigulo. Right? It sounds like it doesn't have to be in Beit Chamiv. Because they sent the water out of the house, they sent him on his horse. So Gemara says, Dilma ko petach Beit Chamiv ko Beit Chamiv dami. I mean, that Beit Chamiv doesn't have to literally be physically in the house. It means it has to be within the, right, his periphery or within his, I would call it a sphere of influence, sphere of house. So that over here, just because he was on his horse right outside the house, that's sufficient to be considered Beit Chamiv. That's not considered his house. Now the Gemara continues, Ibayiluhu, Mahu. So there's a question about the Girsa, and based on the Girsa, it will determine what you think the Gemara is saying over here. There's one possibility in the Girsa, which seems to be the older Girsa, is Mahu Shi Shalesh. Right? What is this story? Mahu Shalesh Shevach Sivlonot. Right, Mahu. What's the din? This is the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel, and Tosfos brings it, and that Rashbam quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel was about this as well. That's not in our Sfarim. He says that his Girsa, the Rabbeinu Chananel's Girsa, is not in our Sfarim, although it turns out that it is in our Sfarim. That Yishalesh is going back on Rava. That's a question that goes back on Rava that says Dafka Dinar. He says the threshold to lose your Sivlonot is a meal of a dinar's worth. What happens if it's less than a dinar? So the word ishalish, we see in other places, means to come to divide up or to distribute. So what happens if you take a meal less than a dinar? Do we say that she keeps a pro rata portion of the sivlonot? If you've got half a dinar, she can keep 50% of the sivlonot. I mean, is dinar the threshold to keep all the sivlonot? And below a dinar, then you'll keep a pro rata share based on your, you know, percentage of dinar that you got, she'll keep that percentage of the sivlonot, or no? Right, dinar is an absolute threshold and nothing below it. So it's not below dinar, it's not. The other girsa, which maybe makes more sense, this idea that below the threshold you would get a portion of the sivlonot seems not to make so much sense to me, because a dinar is a threshold. Even if you say that a dinar in general is a normal meal, norcha de milta nokot, it's still, whenever you have a threshold, that's a issue of significance. That something's not significant until you read that threshold. To say a chatzi dinar, then you get half the sivlonot, doesn't seem to make so much sense that, oh, half the threshold, you get half the amount. Doesn't, in general, we don't see that type of question, and that's probably what led to the girsa change, or the other explanation, which is that she shalim over here, which is that she must pay shevach sivlonot. So that she must pay the excess or the appreciation of the sivlonot. I mean, whatever the payrot, the output, that which is the benefit from the sivlonot, what's the din? Does she have to return that or not? Which seems to be a bigger, better question, which is fine. If she has to return the sivlonot, what about the shevach or the payrot or the utility of those sivlonot? Does she have to return those also? How much ownership does she have over the sivlonot, meaning in terms of shevach and in terms of other items, versus when she gives them back, that she loses ownership. So that's the way now our girsa follows that. Kevan de eat nehu lididei hadre. Right, since if they are right still around, if she does not consume the sivlonot, right, then hadre, they go back. So therefore, bishutei shavuch. They really go appreciating in the possession of the husband or the husband-to-be, because he grants her the gift. She's allowed to consume them. But if she doesn't consume them, they must be returned. I mean, if there's a dissolution of the marriage, then the sivlonot go back if they were not consumed. So if that's the case, it belongs to whom? It belongs to the husband until they are consumed. O Dilma, kevan di avdei omignevei, if they are lost or stolen, right, by Yishlumele, then she will have to replace them. I mean that if she loses, or, you know, the sivlonot somehow or disappear over here, then she's going to have to replace that value. She's going to have to repay that value. B'shuta dida shavuch. Then really, they're in her possession to go up in value. I mean that her responsibility for the sivlonot is an indication that she really owns the sivlonot. She owns them because the fact is, if she loses them or something, she's going to have to replace the monetary value, right, of these items. The fact that she can replace them through monetary value is an indication of her ownership over those items, Right? So therefore, the shevach really is accruing to her benefit. So that the Gemara leaves as a teiku. Right? That the Gemara leaves as unanswered. Either if you explain it as the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is, if it's less than a dinar, do you get a pro rata share? Then it's a teiku. Or if it's, or if it's the question based on the Rif and the Rosh and the Girsa that Shevach, does it accrue to her or to the grantor, the future husband, that the Gemara leaves as a teiku. We're unsure of what the nature of the ownership over these Sivlonot are over here. So now the Gemara says, Bayi Rava Sivlonot ha'usu'im livalot velo balu mahu. So Sivlonot that were consumables, right, or they are items that normally get used, below balu, and they did not either deteriorate or they're not consumed. Mahu. So what's the din? Tashma. Zu alocha ela rabbi achas arbi arlef nechachamim ba'usha. Ve'amru. Sivlonot hasu'im livalot enigvin. Those items that are normally consumables, you can't claim them back. Ve'ein hasu'im livalot, and those that are not, are durables, nigvin. My love. Afakav de lo balu. Right? It sounds like from there that it's irrespective of whether they consumed or not consumed. Right? You don't get them back. So lo, de balu. Who says? You could just say that only the ones that were consumed don't come back. That's why it says Tashma, our Mishnah. Sivlonot muatim, she tish demesh behen vehi bebeit avia, e nigvin. It's sivlonot that are small amount that she's going to use, right, in her father's house, they don't come back. So if that's the case, over there, the Mishnah does not distinguish between consumables or non-consumables over here. Meaning that it was a small amount, the gift, it was intended to be used in her father's house. Whether she used them or not, they're not coming back. And you can't answer like we did in the previous, probably with the Brites, or to what the Pesach of the Chachamim, it's a case below Balu. Because our Mishnah should have said that. It shouldn't have been Stam and just ignored that factor. The fact that it ignores the fact that it seems that it doesn't matter. So it's, the Gemara says, you don't have to answer that. Targum Rava, Baiva Visivkata. That the issues or the items that are gifted in the father's house, the consumables, are these Baiva Visivkata, which the Rashbam calls them as Minetzi Ifim Bikishure Nashim. Scarves and Takshitim, some sort of decorative items that are given that women wear. Shem Devar Muat. They're small items. Umachil. The Gamri. He's always totally mochel on them. Lo shol banu, lo shol balu. Doesn't matter whether they're consumed or not consumed. Right? That it was the idea here in our Mishnah is not related to consumables and not consumables or being consumed and not consumed. It's about the size, meaning that the object is so small or so insignificant that he's mochel on them. And that he would never have intent to take those back because they're too insignificant for him to worry about getting them back. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, Masaba Adam Echad, Shishigir Lebeit Chamiv, Yain Chadash, V'Shemen Chadash, Uklei Pishtan Chadash, Batzeret. So he sent new wine, fresh wine, new oil, new linen garments on Shavuot to his father's house. So first of all, Micah Mashalan. Well, let's just start. What is he telling us that he sent this stuff in at Shavuot? Why is that relevant at all? It says, Ibai Deima Chashivot to Eretz Yisrael. One is that this is Shevach Eretz Yisrael, that its fruits ripen so fast, and by the time of Shavuot, you're able to do all of these items. So that's one possibility why I mentioned this way. That if he comes back in the time of Tishrei and claims that he gave such a gift at Shavuot time, we believe him. We don't say that he's lying, that there's no way that you had wine already from the Gat, or that you had Shemen already. But I say that he has a valid claim because he could have given such a gift. Amar Yudam Rav are a series of memorals by Amar Yudam Rav. So Marav brings this one and says, okay, well, why did Rabbi Yehuda say this? What was it most significant about it? So the answer is that the Atzeret part of it was significant. Right, so Amar Yudam Rav, Maseba Adam Echad, Shamrulo Ishto Totarniti. So whatever this Totarnit means that she lacks a sense of smell. Benichnas Acharea L'Chorva L'Vodka. He went after her to a place, a desolated place, to check out her sense of smell, to see if she really smelled. So the Rashbam explains that generally when it comes to mumin, they dissolve the kedushin automatically because it's a mekach taot, because the premise of the marriage was faulty. But once you get to nisuin, we say that he's mochel. Because if he already went through with the nisuin, we assume that he checked it out, and that he went through with the marriage, that he's mochel on all the mumin. So over here, the Rishbam claims that he was not mochel on the mumin because it's a mum shebeseter. It's something that's not obvious. The lack of sense of smell is not something that you could say he came to the nesuim that he was mochel on it, because he never knew about it. But if you can only be mochel on something that you have understanding or you have a sense of, so that then you could say bodka, that he checked her out and he was willing to go through with the marriage. But if it's something that he would never had knowledge about, then you can't say that the nesuim overrode the mekach taut over here and he was mochel. But rather, in that case, if he was kachestam v'kantestam v'nimtzu v'mumim, they'd say below ktuba. In that case, she has to go out without a ktuba. He'll need a get to divorce her, but she won't get her ktuba over there because of this problem of the mekach taut. So that's why they're discussing this mum. What does the mum do? Now again, this is the Rashbam will say the shita to, which is that he's discussing a nisua over here. If you're dealing with an arusa, then it becomes less of an issue about whether there's a mum here or not, because you can always dissolve the marriage for a mum prior to the nisuin. Amalah, he said to her, Reach, no, not ime reach. So, Begalil, I smell the smell of a radish over here. Now, the question of what he did either he had hid a radish in his pocket, and he said, I smell a radish over here, and he was testing her to see what she would smell, or he actually had dates in his pocket. And he says to her, I smell some radish, to see if she goes, yeah, 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 or she figures out that the smell is not of radishes, but rather of dates. So Amra Le, so she responded to him, Man yehaivlan kodvot yericho v'achal nabe. So who will give us from the dates of Yericho to enjoy it or joy together? Because the Rishon points out here that they used to mix together sweet and that which was Kharif. So the tznon that was Kharif, they used to have sweet dates along with it. So today it's not common for us. Moroccans do something like that, where they'll have something very sweet with something other offsetting taste. So you have she says back to him. So the response, depending if he really was hiding dates, then she got past the test. Or even if he had a tznon in there, her answer, she was guilty that she right indicate she knew that what was going on, and she said, you know, give me some dates so we can eat with the tznon. So she got it. She passed the test. So now, but the problem was, right, nafal ala churva umeta. But while they were in this location, the place collapsed, and she died. Amru chachamim, hoyo v'lo nichnas acharea, el bodka, meta, en yorsha. Since he only went in there to check on her, now that she dies, she's not yorsha. What's the case over here? Right, what's going on over here?
Did he give a guess of
no, he's alive. He's alive. Right.
He's not
your Yerusha. So what happened? What happened over here? So it happens to be Machlokas Arishonim, a major Machlokas Arishonim. Are they married or are they not married? Is there only Kesef Kedushin without Nisuin? She's an Arusa, one possibility. Or is she a Nisua over here? So the Rashbam says she has to be a Nisua over here. Well, why would an Arusa... Right, what's going on over here? Going to loan to a churva, even if... What's the story with this Arusa? And even if she was Nivelet, you know, Kodem, Nisuin, right, what is that? Why would that help? So he says, the Rashbam claims over here that it has to be that she is Nisua. But if she's Nisua, the fact that he went to test her sense of smell, what does that have to do with anything? Why does that help? So he says that they have to mihachash ma'inan. Listen to this, Rishvam. It's an unbelievable one. Mihachash ma'inan. Shemi shemeta ishto mitoch ktata sheyesh b'da'ato legarsha. Someone who dies, a wife dies out of they had an altercation, they're having a quarrel of some sort, but he has intended to divorce her. Shuv ina yorsha. She does not inherit her. And we see this in other places, that the termination of the marriage is not the get. You see this in other places, that the actual termination of the marriage is when the man has the intent to divorce his wife. See that also, the Gemara, in other places, for instance, about Bia, that an individual has Natanei Nabi Isha the Garsha, who has thought about divorcing her, he should not, right, he should not have relations with her anymore. He should not have Bia with her anymore. That there is, at that point, the point where the man has decided to divorce his wife, the marriage is over. The get is just a formal way to have the marriage be terminated. That's what is necessitated by the Torah. But the marriage is already dissolved, or at the point of, I intend to divorce you. That is the end of the marriage.
He can still change his mind, right?
Yes, he can change his mind, because he hasn't formalized it with the get. But as far as the marriage is concerned, it's terminated unless he does something to, right, to change that. So that's what the Rashbam is indicating, something to that effect over here, which is that when he went in there, he intended to divorce her because she had a mum. If she has a mum, right, he doesn't, he's not intending to stay married to her, he's intending to divorce her. So that's one. The Rashbam quotes another opinion, which is that it was an arusa. And of course, Tosfos, right, he says, Perish Rabbeinu Yaakov de Arusa Mari. Rabbeinu Yaakov says that we're dealing with an arusa over here. And he says that the Rabbeinu Shmuel, right, the Rashbam says that it was Nusua. He says, that can't be. He says that it's not the case, it has to be a case of arusa. Why? Because the issue over here is that if she's an arusa, and he goes into the churva, and the churva is his churva, then he could create a chupa. So he goes in there. If he had intended to marry her, he would have succeeded at marrying her because he could have had nisuin. He could have created chupa. Chupa is that he brings the woman into his house. Right? So now the churva belongs to him. We have to assume. I'm saying you have to assume in this case. That's the only way it would work. Because the Gemara says, because he intended to bodka, therefore it fails. Had he not intended to be bodka, it would have been a good marriage. How could that be?
Why would he be going in there if it's not a bodka?
But that only works if it's his place. He has to own the place. So anyway, the assumption is that he had two possibilities. He could have gone in there, it's his place. He could have gone there and consummated the marriage, had it in the suin, the third, because it's a chupa now. Or he's going in to check her. Now, if he's going to check her, then what's his intent? His intent is not to create nisuin. So if he doesn't create nisuin, then meita in a yorsha. Because he's only yorsha, right, after the point of nisuin.
But maybe the second that she gave a good answer, so then obviously he wanted to marry her. Then he created a chuppah.
But that wasn't the intent. I mean, the chuppah has to be, you have to take her into your house with the intent of creating a chuppah.
Yeah, actually cross over into...
Right, that wasn't the intent of the...
It sounds like he can't marry her if he was going to marry that divorce.
So the Rashbam adds a little bit of a line. I understand. Your question is, why not... his whole point was he went in there to test her smell. She passed the test, and he didn't intend to divorce her. So that the Rashbam makes I'll read this. He says, "Ubetochach meita." She died at the time of the test, right? Kodem shinit paisu, before they had time to reconcile. Meaning that he feels that his intent was to divorce her, and then there was no point of reconciliation, and therefore ein zochah birusha. So Rashbam has to deal with your issue, which is that when she passes the test, that should mean that he doesn't intend to divorce anymore. The answer, again, is that that's not the case. The case is that there wasn't sufficient time for that mindset to set in, or the reconciliation to set in. Right, to answer that question. Yotiv Rabin, Savo, Kamei Rapapa, Yotiv Kamar. And he said like this, Ben Shemit Tehi, whether she dies, Ben Shemit Hu, whether he dies, so we're talking about a case of, right, onus, Hadar Hu, or he backs out of the Kiddushin, Sivlonot Hadre, the Sivlonot come back, Machalo Mishteh, Lo Hadar. When it comes to the food or the meal, that doesn't come back. Hadra ba'ihi, on the other hand, if she backs out of the kiddushin, hadra afilu kisha diarko, she has to repay the food, right? Even the smallest amount of food that she consumed. So you have here where the chatan gave a gift to his wife, the sivlonot that we've discussed until this point in time. He gave her also a meal. He brought food, he brought a meal, so on and so forth. So as long as she's not at fault for the dissolution of the marriage, the food that was eaten or the meal that was consumed there's no obligation to return it. The sivlonot are going to go back. And the sivlonot over here go back, and that includes, Tosos mentioned over here, that also moharei hadre. It's clear here that the moharei also go back, whether that moharei is sivlonot or moharei is the gifts that were intended for the ketubah, because there was no nisuin over here. So for sure, the moharei go back, the sivlonot go back, the machal mishteh stays at that point in time. Now, which type of sivlonot are we talking about over here? So that the Rashbam clarifies over here. These are sivlonot hadre, kigon sivlonot she'en asum livalot. Right? These are items that are not consumables. Sheshalach stam, that he sent without any indication of what their purpose was. But if he sends food and drink, they don't come back. As long as he ate a dinar's worth. Because those are consumables. Consumables don't have to return. They are machul in those cases. Right? If he specifically states that if I'm giving them to you with the condition that they return, we don't get married, that's our Mishnah. But if she backs out of it, but the one thing that doesn't go back is the Kesef Kiddushin, which is what we discussed in the previous Gemara, right? That the Kesef Kiddushin does not return because of the Gzeira, Shema Yomar, that he can marry Achuto. But so the Kesef Kiddushin doesn't come back even when she backs out of it. So if it comes out, if she backs out, Kesef Kiddushin stays, everything else comes back, right, when she backs out of it. When it's he who backs out of it, or there was some sort of onus that took place, right, then whether he died, she died, in that case, it doesn't come back, and that will be determined by all the qualifications we gave before, which is that if they are consumable items, they don't come back. Non-consumables would have to be returned. That's what Siblenot Hadri means. Non-consumables, durables, would have to be returned. And if, unless he stipulated, like at the end of the Mishnah, he stipulated that I want you to bring them into my house, then of course they would return. If they're for Beit Chaviah, then he's a Mokhel, and they stay there. So now the Gemara says, okay, if she has to give back the food, I'm Rav Huna Brei Yeshua, how do you assess how much she ate, the value of the food that she ate? Shaman Lehen, Demei Basar Bezol. So he says, how much, meaning that we don't make her pay for the actual amount of the food that she consumed, the real value of the food, we make her pay, meaning that if he hadn't brought the food, she would have to eat. So this is like Mishali Masha Ne'anet, right, that we had in Baba Kama. When the animal eats, even if he eats from really good produce, we don't say that the Baal Ashur has to pay back that value that really brought it. He has to pay back Subin, what he normally would have fed his animals. So that's Masha Ne'anet. So Sabir, what she normally would have eaten would have been enough. So that's Demei Basar Bezol. So how much is that? Ad Tilta. That's a discount of a third. I mean, up to 2/3 of the value of the food, that's what she would pay, because the normal value would be a discount of a third. It's Mishnah. Shchiv Meira, Shekatav Kol Nechasav La'Acherim. Shchiv Meira that writes all of his possessions to someone else. V'shiar Kakro Choshuhu. He leaves over a small piece of land for himself. Matandanato Kayemet. Right, then his gift is a good gift, even if he survives. I mean, even if he does not die here, his gift is a gift. Lo Shiar Kakro Choshuhu, if he left over nothing, then his matanah doesn't go through, because then the underlying assumption is that I'm going to die. If I'm going to die, my gift is a gift. If I'm not going to die, then it's almost an implicit tanai here that if I don't die, then the gift is rescinded. Who's the tana that we go after the context or the situation to say that there's an implicit tanai over here? Why? So it's clear from the Mishnah that he grants the gift as a shchemi, right? He makes no statement about what his intent is, but we are implying that his intent is that if I die, the gift will go through. If I don't die, the gift will be rescinded. But he never said that. So that we're going bater umdana, what we thought he intended in his gift. So Mar says, I'm Rav Nachman, Rav Shimon ben Asiyahi. Rav Nachman says it's Rabbi Shimon ben Asiyah. Who's that? The Tanya. Harei shalach beno, this is the Gemara we just had earlier on Kuf Lamed Bet. Harei shalach beno lo midinat hayam. V'shama shemeit beno. So then his son went overseas. He heard, he got news or a rumor that his son had passed away. V'amad v'katav kol nechasav l'acher. Went ahead and wrote away all his possessions to someone else. V'achakach v'abeno. Sure enough, his son shows up and he hadn't passed away. Matanato matana. The Chachamim believe that it's a good gift because he never stipulated anything. He never made any stipulation that I'm gifting it to because my son's not here. If my son shows up, I'll get it back. Shem benasi omer, ein matanato matana. Why? She il malei with a yud, haya yudeh shibno kayam. Had he known that his son was alive, lo haya kotvan, he would never have done the gift. Why? How do you know that? Because he only gifted it after he found the news that his son had passed away. If he really wanted to gift it even when his son was around, he would have done it before his son left. The fact that he waited is indication. It's clear that his whole intent here is that he's gifting it to this third party because his son's not here. So we say it's an umdana de milsa, that if, even though it's not stipulated or stated in his tanai, nevertheless, we're going to say, yes, that's it. The Tanai exists, and if the son shows up, the gift is rescinded. Of course, Tosfos over here quotes, we mentioned this back in Kuf Lamed Bet as well, Tosfos says, well, how do you reconcile here between Dvarim Shebelev, Inim Dvarim, and between Umdud and Milsa? And that goes back to the we discussed the Tosfos on Dapam Teder Mudbet in Kiddushin, where Tosfos lays out different types of cases. Certain cases where it's an umdana de milsa, certain cases where it's obvious from the context that that is the implicit tanai over there, and therefore there is a right a tanai, even though you've said nothing, you've done nothing, it's automatically assumed. There are certain cases where you have to stipulate the tanai explicitly, and if you don't make the explicit tanai, it won't work. Right? And there are other cases that are somewhere in between, somewhat between those two extremes, of whether you have to stipulate the tanai and where you say nothing as an umda de milsa. There are certain other areas where you might not need a full, maybe tanai gad ruvein, you might not need all the conditions of a normal tanai, but you still have to maybe say something. So those are those three categories, depending on, you know, how far. So these are cases where we call umda de milsa, where it's obvious from the context of what he's doing. Rav Shimon Zuri is the author of our Mishnah, the Tanya. It's a price. President goes out to, you know, he's being to be executed. For my kids who get lishti, write a gift for my wife. No. That when he instructs them to write it, it means intends for them to write it and give it. He said that that was true also if someone was going out to sea or someone's going on a long caravan, because in those days it was a dangerous, it was a long trip. He says, kidvu to get lishti, then we say not only did he want to write it, but he wanted him to give it. Anybody who's in danger or anybody is ill who makes such a statement of write a gift to my wife, he means write and give it. Now, truthfully, the Rabbanan of Rav Shimon ben Zuri could also have said the same thing. They also say that we umdud and milsa, when he says write the get, means give it. But Rav Shimon ben Zuri is the, I guess, the most extreme representation of that. And it's true. Or when he says Rav Shimon ben Zuri, it means Rav Shimon ben Zuri and his chachamim. Everybody in that Mishnah would be included. Or because of Rav Shimon ben Zuri's extreme, we place it under his, you know, under his name. So Rav Nachman, my time, alo mukim like Rav Shimon ben Zuri. Why does Rav Nachman set up our Mishnah like Rav Shimon ben Nasya and not like Rav Shimon ben Zuri? So when I say, shiny hotam, damar kidvu. Rav Nachman says, wait a minute. Over there in the case of Rav Shimon ben Zuri, they said kidvu. If he says to them, write a get, why, what else do you write a get for? You don't write a get for no reason. It's clear that if he told them to write a get, that he intended for them to give the get, because writing a get is by itself is meaningless. So why would he instruct them to write the get unless he also intended for them to give it? Rav Sheish is my time alone looking like Rav Shimon ben Asio. Why does Rav Sheish is not set up but like Rav Shimon ben Asio, who says that it's right, the umdana by the sun? He says umdana muchach shiny. He says that when it's an obvious umdana, then it does it. There's nothing to talk about over here. So umdana muchach when it's so obvious.
How is that more muchach
than his son was alive? Right, he didn't give it. That's shemait until he heard that he died. Aval cholet, when it comes to someone who's sick, came into rov cholim lechayim. Most people are sick, don't die. So here it's not an umdana de muchach that he will pass away. So now you ask about what about his case? Right, his case is the case about kidvu get. Why isn't that an umdana de muchach over there? Why don't we just say there also it's an umdana de muchach? You say no, maybe he says, you know, write a get, and then he could have been changed his mind. He really meant kidvu, and then he could have said, you know, he was intending to say, no, he said, forget it, you know what, I'm not going to give the get. So that you don't know that the fact that he didn't say netnu, is that a rescinding of his original intent to give the get, or is that just because he's bahul, and therefore he doesn't say it? So there is not an umdana de muchach, because you could interpret, right, you could interpret his lack of tnu in two different ways. One is a reversal of his original kidvu, or the other one is that he's bahul and he didn't go. So that's not an umdana de muchach. We'll stop over there.